Hey everyone, welcome in to a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am back for today, but again, Chad has been doing such a great job that I think I'm actually going to take tomorrow off too. But hey, I did want to swing by today because I have been following these markets kind of at a distance while I've been away. And I have to say the gold sector, when you look at it from kind of a high level view, is set up very, very well for, I think, money to continue to come into the sector, then also filter down into some of the smaller stocks, which I know a lot of us are waiting for to still broadly move higher. We are chatting right now with Eric Wetterling, founder and editor of The Hedgeless Horseman. And Eric, as I said on the onset here, you look at the gold sector, the majors, a lot of them are doing well. Silver has been doing better than gold and seems to just continue to stabilize, show strength. Gold has stabilized well above 1900 now after just a little bit of weakness mid this month. And there does seem to be kind of day after day, this almost buy the dip mentality for the precious metals, for gold especially. Eric, in terms of this environment and then filtering down to the juniors, which I'm sure some people are saying, man, it's got to be their time soon. That money does need to trickle down through even the mid-tiers to the juniors. How are you viewing this general setup for the juniors in the gold space?
I mean, I've never seen anything like it in terms of junior undervaluation. And that's why, I mean, you guys know, and everyone that's listened to my rants for the last, I don't know, years should know that I'm a value investor and I don't use a lot of trading or whatever. I'm just looking at, okay, where is the gold price? It's, you know, near all-time highs. And I'm looking at junior valuations, junior sentiment levels, which explain the valuation. They're near bottom levels. I mean, some juniors have started to go up, but it's like we're so far away from a frothy market and frothy valuations. And I think, I mean, this is the best setup I have ever seen and the best setup I ever expect to see. I mean, I bought every bottom since I started because I buy all the time and just ramp it up when it looks cheap. But I have never seen a case when I'm buying where it's like it's so grossly undervalued, where the business is so much more valuable than what is implied in the junior sector. Because in the 2015-16 bottom, when juniors were low, at least in price, I mean, but at face value, they weren't cheap because the business didn't make any money. So, I mean, even if you found a project at face value, they were worthless. Now it's completely different, but you have almost the same valuations in many juniors as you did back then. So it's like, this is crazy early, I think, still in the juniors. And we're seeing Newmont close to taking out an all-time high from 1987. So gold is on fire. Silver is starting to catch some fire. Majors are performing well. But it's like everyone forgot that the junior miners are actually the future supply and has actually something to do with both the gold silver business and gold and silver itself. So it's like a total dislocation. And that's why I'm, you know, so super bullish on juniors, not as much on majors from a value perspective. But I'm speechless. I couldn't ask for a better or an easier layup.
Well, Eric, it is encouraging to see not just the metals prices, you know, near very good levels, silver gaining on gold, the very largest cap stocks getting a bid and the royalty companies also getting a bid. But it's also the fact that a lot of these juniors haven't moved yet that still gives people the potential to position in them, especially if people expect that the metals could break even higher in the years to come. So that's a good setup. But we had talked off mic about one of the flaws after being in a two-year corrective move is the sentiment is pretty damaged, pretty sour. And so when we finally start seeing the junior stocks make their moves, which can be outsized gains, we talked about the Rick Ruleism last week that you've stayed around for the pain, now stay around for the gains. So you had made some good comments about how people may want to sell and impulsively see a little bit of green on the screen and jump out of these stocks too early. I'd love you to elaborate on that.
Yeah, I mean, if you came in late in a bootleg, let's say, and you bought high, basically. So let's say over the last 2 years, 95% of your time, you felt like, you know, a failure. You looked at decreasing value of your portfolio. So you're getting accustomed and the market has been telling you, you're an idiot, you're an idiot, you're an idiot. So you're not expecting, if you don't have high conviction and know what you're doing, you're probably going to believe Mr. Market that you have been wrong, that you didn't buy a good junior or whatever. And I think that's going to taint your view of the future and the current state, let's say, because, I mean, polar opposite would be in the crypto market when that went up. I think people felt invincible, immortal, etc. They just took more and more risk, because they couldn't lose. Because everything was just going up and up and up and up. So that's going to, of course, color their behavior, because many of them blow up later because they can't even fathom a market going down. And so now I think a lot of people can't fathom a steady climb, especially those who haven't seen it before. I mean, I've been a part of like 3 or 4 40 to 50% correction. I've seen this all before, and I've been a part of the 100% runs from said bottoms. So I'm in it for the long term. I don't think we have even begun. I mean, gold, as yes, we've touched, you know, close to what I'm high. But if we break out of what would, you know, could be seen as a cup and handle, that's the start of the next big leg up. So I think, like you said earlier, don't stick around for like a 2-year period of being dragged across concrete, basically. And then just, you know, pack up shop when they're not even close to fair valuation, let alone overvaluation, just because, you know, you can't take it anymore. I mean, then you're actually, I think, handing over like 90% of the opportunity because you couldn't stick it out to, you know, let the opportunity play out. Because, I mean, a good buy doesn't show profit tomorrow. A good buy, a no-brainer buy, let's say, it might take 3 years for it to play out and you reap the full benefit. So I think when I'm looking at sentiment in juniors, evaluation, etc., we're like super early. It's like, I don't care if I have an update of 5-10% in some juniors. I expect 200% over the next 12 to 24 months. That's my game. And I'm not in this to have, you know, 30% returns over a few months and then just call it quits if I'm breaking even, let's say, on a 2-year, you know, basis.
Well, Eric, let's not beat anybody up for wanting to sell when, quite frankly, those are very different investments and one would argue very different time frames. If you're investing now and you think it's a no-brainer, but it's going to go up in 3 years compared to 3 months, that's a totally different investment. And quite frankly, I don't think you can ever blame somebody for selling when something is going up, especially when they've made it, let's say, back to even on their stock when they've put up a couple years of pain. That doesn't seem like the best buy. And fine, they could be leaving some on the board. I think we need to look elsewhere, though, because where would they rotate that money into? You look at the broad averages, those aren't doing very well at all. They're putting in lower lows, lower highs throughout the first almost 3 months of this year. So it's now the alternative that isn't as available as it was when everybody seemed to be losing money in juniors when the market was going up. So there is always that alternative of where they're going to invest. I do understand that you're saying don't sell out maybe of all your positions because they have bounced, but I don't think we should ever be telling people don't sell because it's only going to go up from here. That's never a guarantee, especially in a sector where people have lost money. But to your point, when would you sell then? If you've waited this long in a losing position and you start to see these stocks going up, what's your time frame for a sell then?
Well, I mean, I think that's this topic touches on conviction, etc. Actually knowing what you're doing. I have a, you know, buy plan and sell plan, etc. based on value. So I'll never sell early because it, you know, feels good or whatever. I'll sell when, you know, the conditions are different or I think sentiment is really high, etc. When I can project, you know, a good return on a 2-year basis, let's say.
So what is that though now, Eric? That's one thing that we've talked about many times is, quite frankly, when would you sell here? What is your time frame now that people probably have lost money over the last year and a half?
Well, I think, like I said in a previous episode, I mean, I expect basically to run with this golden mining bull until the system is pretty much resetted. You know, yeah, pretty much resetted. So it's like I don't even actually think actively about an exit strategy because I don't think we're even close to it. Again, if you look at gold and you look at miners valuations, like I think it's way too early to even consider that fact. And at the end of the day, it's like, let's fast forward a few years deeper into a bull and you've been picking good companies that have been growing. So I can be off by 30% from the top in my exit strategy, let's say, And I think I'm going to, you know, do well. But the key is, of course, to have the stomach to hold on. So it's like, it's hard to blame others for what they're doing or what they should be doing, etc. Because what I do makes total sense to me. And that's how I made my money. And it's hard. You can transfer conviction, obviously. But it's like, I think it's way too early to even think about exit strategies. And that's why I think it's like leaving way too much, irrationally large amounts of money on the table by taking the easy way out. Like, yeah, I'm breaking even, and, you know, okay, I can leave with a neutral profit or whatever. It's like, sure, do that, but you're never going to really beat the market. So it's like, yeah, I mean, what feels good and what is right are totally different things. It's not fun to be part of a 2-year downtrend. It's not fun buying low when you thought it was already too cheap and it gets cheaper. But it's like, I'm doing not what feels good. I'm doing what makes, to me, perfect sense. So I don't know. It's hard for me to like justify emotional reasons for what makes sense for other people.
Well, Eric, I mean, I think that's fair because everybody should have their own strategy. Everybody should know themselves, and everybody should look at things through the lens of what their investment goals are, what their risk tolerance levels are. So that comes down to what jurisdiction they pick, what size of companies they pick, how much they invest, how much they have to lose. Is it speculative money? Is it more conservative money? So it's going to be different for everybody. You should follow your convictions. Everybody else should follow their own. But there is that point of view that in a bull market, if the metals are going to go higher, that the mining stocks should outperform, typically a 3-to-1 ratio, you know, sometimes more than that. In the juniors, it could be a 5-to-1 ratio that they outperform the metals. So I guess the question would be, do you have any targets about when you buy a stock, about how high you think it should be valued based on when you look at the project and the company before you would want to sell it based on it? Hey, it's now at fair valuation. And at fair valuation, there's not the opportunity anymore. So do you look at things through that lens at all?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good question. And that's why I think it is also so hard to answer Corey's question. Because, I mean, I try to have a big margin of safety, let's say. Because the value of an ounce in the ground oscillates so incredibly much depending on sentiment levels. I mean, during peaks, you might have an ounce in Brazil trading for $100 per ounce. And then, you know, a few years later, it's trading for $15 per ounce. So it's like incredibly hard. Do you set it at 90 or 100? Or what happens if you have it at 100, but it trades up to 90 and then turns back? So you missed your whole exit strategy. So I think the best strategies are the simplest strategies and obviously have the simplest edge. And that's why I try to focus on growth to make it even easier for myself. Because if I think a company's underlying value can compound for like 30% per year, whatever, and you hold it out for X amount of years, I mean, that leaves a lot of cushion for your arbitrary exit strategy to be quite wrong, because that would be from such a much higher valuation. That's why I hate trading sardines, because then you actually have to have really good timing, and I find it just so boring. So it's like, if you look at any of the really good growth stocks, at every sentiment bottom, that bottom is higher than the previous one. Whereas in a trading sardine like Bear Creek Mining and the Strategic Metals, the bottoms are pretty much at the same level. So you didn't gain anything if you sold the sentiment low on the third bottom, because it's as low as the first one. But if you have a growth stock that you held for, let's say, 1, 2, 3 years, even if you sell at the exact worst time, you're probably going to be sitting at a profit. So it's like, I just try to stack the odds in my favor, because I know I'm not a good market timer, and I don't even have a clear exit strategy, except that, you know, I mean, you can pick a, you know, exit strategy like Pierre Lassonde, you know, Dove to gold at one, I mean, or a gold silver ratio at whatever. It's like, even if you're close to that, you can have a lot of margin of safety, I think, just by focusing on picking the best companies that are actually going to grow. And again, stacking dollars in your favor, because I hate having to have accuracy in any case. I think no brainer should be cases where you can miss a lot and still win. And if you're just trading a trading sardine, basically, the gains are typically fixed. And if you're wrong, you'll go back to square one. So I don't know if I answer that well. I guess I'm saying I don't have a clear plan for a lot of things. I just buy companies and hold companies that I think are going to be simply worth a lot more in the next 1, 2, 3 years.
All right. There you go, Eric. I think that summarized it perfectly. You have that longer-term outlook, and you're seeing still a lot of value in a lot of these juniors, and you're not going to be selling, it sounds like, anytime soon on a run higher. So, hey, fair enough. That strategy can work very well when we are in these bull markets, and hopefully that money does start to or continue to trickle into the sector and then make its way down to those juniors and more of that broad melt-up stage that we have seen before in the sector. Eric, thank you as always for your time, buddy. We'll chat again next week. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, guys. The same.